An international gang of diamond thieves that uses tactics like ramming two cars into the front of a jewelry store and then making off with millions of dollars worth of diamonds in mere minutes sounds like something out of an action movie. And yet, it's what happened in one of the 152 robberies the elusive band of thieves dubbed the Pink Panthers has pulled off since 2002. Havana Marking's new documentary, Smash and Grab, the story of the Pink Panthers on the run with the world's most successful diamond thieves, includes interviews with members of the gang, surveillance footage of their lightning-fast robberies, and theories about when and where the gang was first formed. It opens today at the Film Forum on West Houston Street, where it will enjoy a two-week run. That's until August 13th. I'm very pleased that it has brought Havana Marking back to our show today.
Hi. Okay.
And you were here before to talk about a very different kind of movie, Afghan Star, which was about a television show in Afghanistan.
Absolutely, yes. That was in 2010, I think. But it's great to be back with a new film.
When did this? When was this gang first dubbed the Pink Panthers?
So they first got that extraordinary title in 2003. They did an extraordinary robbery in London on Bond Street. A lot of the jewels were never recovered from that robbery, but one giant blue diamond was found in a tub of face cream, one of the thieves' girlfriend's face cream, which is exactly like a scene in one of the Pink Panther Peter Sellers films.
Do you think they were inspired by the Pink Panther films?
I think they're inspired by a lot of things. They make no secret of loving the movies and are continuously telling you, it's just like the movies, it's just like the movies.
They've been credited with jewel heists all over the world, not the United States. But
no, it's interesting, actually. They started in mainland Europe and then have become so successful and so sort of brazen that they've gone to, you know, spread their net. They've gone to countries like Dubai, which most people think is kind of impenetrable. There's police everywhere, you would imagine. But they've never done, since 2000, something here. And it has to be said that it's probably since 2011 and all the increased security at airports, etc. One of their big, skills is to have fake passports and to travel across borders.
You mentioned that robbery in Dubai. That's the one I opened with. We have surveillance footage, and it's just like watching an action movie. It's just stunning how much of the robbery was captured on film.
I know. I mean, that is the amazing thing about the contemporary world. You know, there's everything's being filmed. And in fact, halfway through the heist, then people started filming it on their mobile phones. I mean, it was in a public daylight, you know, normal shopping mall.
They crashed right into the center of the shopping mall.
Yeah, they crashed through the sort of glass doors that takes you off the street, along the sort of marble corridors of the mall. It's amazing they didn't hit anyone, but I also imagine they had people saying it's all clear now. And in fact, the first car was reversing. So the first car reverses at great speed and then hits the door. That is so that the airbag doesn't go off, so you then that smashes the door. The thieves run in, and I mean, within 30 seconds or something, they've grabbed enough jewels and they're gone.
Was it it was a successful robbery, but was it smart to have done it in Dubai, considering the fact that Dubai just put so many police onto the solving the crime?
Yeah, it's interesting. So it was unsuccessful in that a lot of the jewels were recovered, not all of them, and various people were caught. There's still a couple of people from that robbery that are at large, so probably for them it was successful, and for the other half it wasn't. I mean, the amazing thing about it is that it then, of course, alerted the entire Middle East to this gang. So every time they do a robbery in a new place, then suddenly that alerts people to look out for this.
We're not talking about a small group of professional thieves. We're talking about a large group of thieves, and yet they all seem to be very sophisticated about how to pull off robberies.
Yeah, so it's sort of estimated that there's around 200 people, but they are a kind of contemporary mafia. They're not a sort of hierarchical, traditional sort of one you imagine from the Italian model.
No big bosses.
No big bosses, exactly. So they're almost like cells, you know. They sort of come and go, they're flexible, they work with different people. And probably as more and more get sent to prison, then more and more join the gang to take their places. So it's not an official sort of recruitment process, but people do know each other. They come from the same towns. And most importantly is that they have the same connections smuggling the diamonds and reselling them into the market.
It's important that they are able to resell the diamonds. That's always been the problem with jewelry thefts in the past.
Yeah, absolutely. And these guys have got amazing connections. And those connections, it's very interesting, forged absolutely during the sort of Balkan conflicts. The smuggling routes were, I mean, there was sort of small-scale smuggling in Yugoslavia. And then once the conflicts began, the Balkanization, the Yugoslavia collapsed, and the sanctions came in 1992, then suddenly those smuggling routes became incredibly valuable criminal outlets.
You said these guys. There are women involved as well, aren't there?
There are. And actually, I was incredibly proud to interview one of the only women to have gone on record. There are not so many women, but, you know, they have a very specific and clear role.
Now, this is not just about jewelry thefts. To explain it, you had to go into the history of the breakup of Yugoslavia. Where are these people from?
Yeah, so the majority of the gang are from Serbia and Montenegro, but there are connections across the board, basically. So,
but they would never allow somebody from another country to join the gang?
I don't think there's ever such a thing as they would never allow. It's just that that's who they know. And, you know, the thing is that the law enforcement agencies have done an amazing job, and so more and more and more are going to prison. Just last year, there were 57 arrests. It's an incredible statistic.
But that's because of changes. Now Serbia wants to be a member of the Eurozone, and so they are cooperating in a way that they didn't in the past.
Yeah, those countries, Montenegro and Serbia, are no longer safe havens, which they used to be. They used to, like, head for the hills and be safe. Now it's absolutely not like that anymore. Also, the international agencies are coordinating much more.
Now, how do we know whether a robbery was pulled off by the Pink Panthers? Did they have an MO? Did they leave a calling card?
There's definitely, exactly, MOs. They usually, just because they're just so quick, so efficient, and have done a lot of preparation. That's what's, I mean, really, in some ways, it's not so difficult to, like, smash a window and grab a diamond. In a way, that's not that difficult. But to do that and not get caught and then to sell the diamonds instantly, that is what takes the skill and preparation.
Havana Marking is the director of a new documentary called Smash and Grab, the story of the Pink Panthers on the run with the world's most successful diamond thieves. It opens today at the Film Forum on West Howson Street. And even though it's a documentary, it can also just be watched as an interesting film about robbers and their methods. And you got to speak to a number of them, although you have some reenactments because not all of them wanted to appear on camera.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I always saw it in a way. Of course, it's a documentary. I make documentaries. That's my passion. But the story was just so, it's basically a contemporary film noir, as far as I'm concerned. Everything about it just fits the film noir genre. There are dubious moral characters. There are there's a heist at the heart of it. You know, things are not going to end well. It's everything that you want from that genre. So that was the way that I sort of set out at the beginning to make the film.
And how did you connect with some of these people?
Well, the inspiration for the film came from an article by David Samuels. He wrote an amazing feature piece for The New Yorker. And it was through him. He was very helpful, and I managed to get a couple of crucial telephone numbers, and then through those people managed to start meeting different people. I met various people before people got, you know, decided to trust me, decided to go for it, and I had to do quite a lot of to-ing and fro-ing and going backwards. Ultimately, I mean, on one hand, there's no doubt about it that piece, that article by David Samuels, was the first time they were labeled the most successful diamond thieves of all time. That fed their ego. They love that. It's like me wanting to win an Oscar, they get a piece in The New Yorker. They like that recognition. But also, I realized as I was doing the main interviews that actually this is something that they can't talk about. They can't tell their children about it. They can't tell their wives or husbands about it.
And one of them used the word paranoia.
Oh, really? You know, there are after effects. These are not happy people. You have the kind of glamour and excitement really at the beginning of the film, but as the film unfolds, you realize that there's much deeper, darker aspects to it, and these are not happy, glamorous people.
Well, they're proud of the fact that they have been able to pull off so many of these spectacular robberies. In fact, in interviews with two Pink Panther members in the film, they describe a successful heist in Spain that they seem to be very proud of. How did that one go down?
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. You know, they plan something intricately to the nth degree. And when it goes well and you are rewarded with those diamonds that you're looking for, then you're proud of that job. This one in Spain was seemed to be a particularly successful one. It was right at the beginning, I think, of the Pink Panthers' sort of reign. And that was when no one was onto them. So they did incredible heists. They waited for a big religious fiesta to happen and used the noise of all the drums and the fireworks and the dancing, etc., to cover the sound of... They hired the shop next door, banged through the wall, took the safe, and were gone again in minutes.
When you met them, did they strike you as criminal types?
Well, it's very interesting because I met three different Panthers, a courier and a fence. So those are different stages, you know, links of the chain, basically. The fence at the end is the guy who recuts the diamond, creates new certificates, gets them back in the legal market. And I have to say, as it went along the chain, you know, by the end, I was really chilled by... I mean, he was someone who's... Even though he didn't do the sort of action, the sort of, in theory, the violent section of the job, he was chilling and ruthless, I felt. And then as it went down to the more kind of, I suppose, manual guys, i.e. the guys who are actually doing the job, it felt like they were kind of happy-go-lucky. And I have to say, we were friends, you know.
And then there were the couriers.
There was the courier in the middle, yeah, who he was more on the chilling end of it. To them, it didn't matter that it was diamonds. It could have been heroin. It could have been anything. It could have been guns, whatever. That's what he did. He was a courier.
In the film, you call Mr. Green the final link. Is he linked to the Bosnian Secret Service?
That's what he says. That's what he says, and I really wouldn't be surprised. I mean, the militias of the of those period, the conflict periods, were powerful and essentially gangsters, you know, ruling the streets, and there were connections definitely there.
Now, just this past Sunday, a thief made off with an estimated $136 million in jewelry from an exhibition at the Carlton Intercontinental Hotel in Cannes. If that number is correct, the robbery would be the biggest jewelry heist in history. And many people thought, are the Pink Panthers active again, especially since there was a recent jailbreak?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't know yet if that was a Panther robbery. It does have hallmarks of a Panther robbery, but there are other people who do steal diamonds. They're not the only people. But yeah, it's interesting because they have, you know, they really are incredible numbers of them in jail now. So it's interesting that they are pulling off still great heists.
All over the world. The jailbreak was in Switzerland.
Oh, yeah. There are Panthers all over the world, in prison, in all over the place.
So they have been found with the jewels, or trying to get rid of the jewels? Or do we just... Do the police now, I guess Interpol is involved, know who these people are by now?
Yeah, I think a lot of them are known to police. It's just whether you actually, A, can find them, or you have evidence to actually prove it was them and there right then at that moment that did that robbery. Obviously, some are, and you see it in the film, some are absolutely clearly their faces, you can see them on the security footage. So, I mean, they are brazen, but it's whether you can catch them. They're usually caught, it has to be said. They're very, very rarely caught actually doing the job. The jobs are clean and quick and amazing. The bit that is getting them more and more is when they have to cross borders. Fake passports are no longer you know, so easy. There's all these chips and IDs and everything and everything and everything. And so that seems to be where they're getting found.
Now, I mentioned that the last time you were here was to talk about your film Afghan Star, which was about an Afghan version of American Idol. I guess there's also a British Idol and idols all over the world.
Yeah.
Did you feel there were any similarities between Afghanistan and the environment that the Pink Panthers live in?
Well, I did actually. It struck me. I don't know if anyone's ever made this comparison, but it post-conflict Afghanistan, I was there, you know, quite recently, and then in former Yugoslavia, sort of 10 years after those conflicts, they're dealing with the same issues. Their geography is the same. They're at either ends of the Silk Route, smuggling, drugs, criminal gangs. I mean, essentially, one's a kind of, you know, heroin and poppies, and the other just the other end of that same trade route. There are remarkable similarities.
Once the jewels are sold, where might they be?
It's an interesting, very interesting point, and there's kind of two channels really to that. The diamonds that are really big and can be recut. So if you recut a diamond, it shrinks in size, obviously.
So it loses some of its
value. It loses some of its value. So it has to be really big for that to still sort of maintain a worthwhile value. Those diamonds will very likely make their way back into the legitimate market. It's quite, you know, and it has to be said, some of those stolen diamonds have been found in the U.S.,
Others might be robbed again in another jewelry
house. And the people who buy them are absolutely believe they're legitimate. So, you know, there's all sorts of shenanigans. But if they're small, it's very likely that they stay within the black market. And their diamonds are now very useful as currency for criminal groups. So you want to buy cocaine, you want to buy guns, you want to buy whatever, you do it with diamonds.
But eventually somebody has to sell the diamonds for real cash.
Yeah, there's still, even the illegal diamonds have to have the right certificates. So they have them.
Smash and Grab, the story of the Pink Panthers on the run with the world's most successful diamond thieves, has just opened at the Film Forum today on West Houston Street. Its run will end on August 13th. You can see Havana Marking tonight for the 8:20 screening at the Film Forum, and then on Friday as well. Thank you so much for being on our show again.
Thank you very much for having me.